Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and delighted to welcome you to another podcast conversation. Today in the conversation with me is Kimberly Lowe, who specializes in conflict resolution and peace building and is a graduate of Columbia University's master's program in negotiation and conflict resolution. Currently, Kim is based in New York. She has supported the work of Nonviolent Peace Force, Mediators Beyond Borders, and the United Nations Department of Peacekeeping Operations and Field Support. In 2016, Kim traveled to Uganda as a research fellow, exploring mediation and narrative storytelling in building sustainable, peaceful solutions in post-conflict settings. Kim is a trained mediator, a United Kingdom qualified lawyer, and holds undergraduate degrees in law and ethical philosophy from the University of Sussex. And today I'm talking with Kim at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego. Welcome to our conversation, Kim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's lovely to have you with us. And you are engaged at the Institute for Peace as a peace researcher with the Women Peacemakers. What is a peace researcher? What do you do?
As a peace researcher, I've been thinking about many things over the last 7 weeks, and it's been an incredible exploration and really shifted many things that I thought I knew to be true before I came. The primary role I give myself is actually one of translation. I see this as being able to translate messages back and forth in different directions in order to create more coherent understandings of what we're trying to do, supporting peace and security in these contexts.
And specifically through the eyes and the voices of women.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Absolutely.
So I understand of the four women peacemakers, you are working with Sabrina Maulabaksh from Trinidad and Tobago and with Rochelle Mordeno from the Philippines, who likes to be called Bibing. How and why did you become a peace researcher?
Well, the how was by a stroke of luck, was through being online and seeing the opportunity somewhere and being grateful to be considered and then chosen. I have a sense of responsibility. I want to do justice to these women in being able to amplify their stories for reasons which they contribute to, not ones that are imposed by international communities.
It's an absorbing but a rather exciting role to be playing with these women.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think part of the excitement for me is the environment that we're in together. Being in residency here at the IPJ for 7 weeks, we have the opportunity to develop relationships that go beyond the interview structure and the formal role that I was hired for. The conversations and the insights that we've shared back and forth have been so much more intimate. And I think we've grown to know one another as multifaceted human beings. It's been very enriching.
That's a lovely way to put it. So you're learning more than just the statistics, perhaps, of lawmaking in their countries. You're learning about the women themselves. And I need to say here that the two women that you're working with, and iVow has interviewed them, are Sabrina Maulabaksh from Trinidad and Tobago and Rochelle Mordeno, or she is always called Bibing, from the Philippines. So let's go back to Sabrina for a moment. Is there a particular lesson that she has provided you with regard to the way women are treated or the way women are positioned in Trinidad and Tobago?
Yes, she has taught me a great deal about the context for women and girls in Trinidad and Tobago and the ways in which she has strategized and experimented and innovated to respond to those conditions. One of the areas where Sabrina is a real pioneer is in articulating the gender dynamics and consequences that come from the situation in Trinidad and Tobago in the conflict there, talking about the gun violence, talking about domestic violence, and looking at those intersections. She's a highly intelligent woman, and the insights that she shares help one to have insight into what it means to be a peacemaker and to navigate that terrain.
That must be very interesting. And out of those facts and the information she's giving you, you're able to compile a narrative, I want to call it, but it's more than a narrative, it's statistics on how life for women in Trinidad and Tobago is progressing. Do you think that she will be able to take the results of your conversation back to her country and make a difference?
I hope so. I hope very much so. My greatest hope is that this research, that this documentation can make a difference. And I'm glad that you gave it that direction, that it is for the benefit of those communities and for those women. And that's been a living question, a living tension that's existing in this program, given our revisions and the changes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll speak to that fully, except to say that with Sabrina walking a path of the personal and then the outward facing has been a very live question for her, and that's been brought into this space. Her document that I hope would be of benefit to people is one that espouses her relationship to the work and how she sees things as a result of her experiences. And one of her greatest hopes is that this will give more information and give passion and empathy to the next generation of young women peacemakers. That's the primary audience for Sabrina. So my hope is that by sharing her story and by sharing her experiences and illuminating how real and sincere a person she is that it will inspire more to want to take up the same struggle.
That's a wonderful way of putting it, Kim, because that really is why we're working now at our stage in life, is for the young girls and women of tomorrow. And are you finding that your conversations take a similar direction when you're speaking with Bibing from the Philippines? Or does she have a different concept or a different vision of how she sees the work that you're doing together?
Yes, she does. She does have a different frame on it. And for Bibing, if everything that I know about her, the one thing that I can say first and foremost is that she is unwaveringly loyal to her community and to the people in Mindanao. And everything that she does, you know, is really with a view to what will empower them and give them the resources, allow them to become the resources for change. That's, I'd say, is a really big point for Bibing, how mm-hmm. focused she is on them.
And that's quite a dramatic and a vital point too. So I'm thinking about the actual day-to-day activities that you have with the peacemakers. When you sit down together, do you have a series of questions planned for them? How does the day go?
It's been a shifting process, mm-hmm. and I think one that's been quite different with the both of them for different reasons, even mm-hmm. though of the four peacemakers we've had, my two do fall into a bit of a category in the sense that they are external to the formal security sector, so they are speaking from civil society. They are speaking, their expertise is NGO-led and informed by diverse influences. So that said, the theme that we have this year, I wanted to give them very free rein of where we could go with the conversation. So we did start out in quite an exploratory manner. If people would go to the website and see the documentation that we will produce, you'll see how diverse they are, the nature of their experiences. So the questions as a result were quite different for both of them.
That's interesting though, and thank you for just mentioning that our listeners will be able to go to the Women Peacemakers website at the IPJ, I believe in 2018, to read the results of your research.
I believe so.
Okay, good. Your background has been very much in negotiation through conflict. Are you finding that your conversations with the peacemakers are focused, unfortunately, in those areas to a degree?
Somewhat to be the case. I would probably put more in the category of alternative strategies. So yes, there are elements of negotiation and of positioning oneself in opposition to certain forces, but I also see the work that both of them do as trying to build alternative pathways mm-hmm. in looking to make connections which may not previously exist. Bibing and Belay Mindanao, her organization, are working to form security sector partnerships where they can have conversations about peace, with the military in the form of mutual education and sharing. And that is a really innovative strategy rather than going in opposition to the military where they know, well, they know where that leads.
Mm-hmm.
My background is as a lawyer, so I do have some experiences with negotiation, though in recent years I've been focusing a lot more on mediation. And being a negotiator or being a mediator, and now being with these women and working as a researcher, I've noticed that the skill that I've been cultivating throughout is the skill of listening, being able to listen really profoundly to what's being shared with me and mm-hmm. to be empathetic in understanding for what purposes. Because my idea for conflict transformation as a furtherance to conflict resolution is that we can rework a wider system, and that system may be features of relationship and the what we're inputting into that. I raise that because I think through having that capacity for listening, I'm able to articulate and then share what are the strategies that are happening for Bibing and Sabrina in their context to work towards peace.
Which means that you're simplifying it for us as part of the end result, ultimately, because many of us listening, and for me personally, we don't understand those roles in these countries for women occasionally. And so I'm hearing that simplification process is going to help us greatly to get a deeper understanding of what these women are doing and facing in their mm-hmm. countries. And if I'm correct with memory about Sabrina, she worked specifically in her country to ban guns as toys for children as holiday gifts. And then that led to quite a remarkable new decision around gun violence in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm sure she shared all of that conversation with you and more.
Yes, yes, absolutely. To your point about perhaps simplification, I would probably hearken back to what I said earlier about a work of translation, because I think that these signs are there. And you're right, perhaps for someone from the outside who may not be aware of those dynamics, I would hope the work would have that function to illuminate what's happening and for help others to see why what they're doing is so important and sometimes quite rare and brave. But the way I think that that links with what you're saying with Sabrina and No Guns for Christmas is that from an outsider's perspective, No Guns for Christmas may have seemed like a really simple campaign that, you know, it might have seemed like any advertising that one might see around Christmas that, you know, that's trying to influence our behavior. Yet what they were doing was something so much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
They're really trying to work with the culture and the psychology around guns and the enthusiasm and sort of normalization for violence that she was trying to interrupt. So yes, I do think that was very good work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really interested me. And of course, in no way, to harken back to your comment, was I trying to simplify what she was doing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It was just one simple campaign that I could adhere to. So you will have had, I imagine, in these conversations, some pretty serious conversations with both of the women. Have you had time during your time with them to have some fun and to learn about the women themselves and how they perceive the world above and beyond some of these tough areas that they're leading in?
Yeah, definitely. We've had some good memories in this time here. We brought the peace women to, is it Coronado Island?
Mm-hmm. And yes.
I think it may have been the first time that little Muhi, Wajma's daughter, was at the ocean on the beach. And
let me just say that one of the peacemakers mm-hmm. comes from Afghanistan and the fourth comes from the Gambia. And to our listeners, when you listen to our interview with Kailan Hunter, you will hear more about those two women. So that was a novelty for her.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Thanks for clarifying. Wajma's daughter, Muhadiza, 2.5-year-old, the youngest peace woman we've had in residence here. She's absolutely joyful. And actually, to raise her is more than just tokenistic. It's evoked a lot for us as a group of women here, memories of being with one's mother, the difficulties in familial relationships, and how these are beautiful memories to be made, beautiful connections. And there's also, you know, there are painful spots in there too for some of us.
Quite often in the moments of joy, the sorrow does come forward, doesn't
yeah,
it? And we can't help it sometimes.
There's a bittersweetness.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So how is this experience shaping your future? Are you likely to do more research as a result of this experience you've had at the IPJ? You're already a very highly qualified woman with, and a mediator and a lawyer. And so how might this change what you'll do going forward?
That's a big question for me. I think this has been absolutely a wonderful experience for how my perspective has become much broader than it was before. Previously, as you mentioned in your kind introduction, I've been in the New York sort of UN HQ context, very high level policy decisions being made, and sometimes the distance between what's happening there in the Secretariat building in the UN Secretariat and then what's happening in the ground in the homes and the villages and the neighborhoods of women like Sabrina and Bibing. Now, it is a question for me how I land within that, where I see mm-hmm. opportunities for my skills to make the most difference, mm-hmm. working closely with them and being able to sort of touch in to a much more humanizing relationship has been very formative for me, and I know that I'll take that in whichever way it goes.
Oh, I'm sure. That's interesting. And so the work that you've done at the IPJ is going to perhaps differently inform your experiences to date, but then in others going forward. Well, I'm very sad to say that unfortunately we've come to the conclusion of our conversation today, Kim. And I just wondered if you had any closing comments that you might wish to make about the Women Peacemakers Program, or the combination of that with the peace research role, because this is a new one in 2017. Just if there's anything you'd like to close with.
Sure. I think that this year's transition is one that is timely, and it's not an easy balance to strike. There are many competing priorities in this intersection, trying to be faithful to local community-facing peace builders, women peacemakers, and at the same time understanding that there are pretty sharp realities within the political macro structures that we have. And I think that this is a fantastic opportunity to make that connection stronger, give it more texture, give it better qualities than what's currently in place. That I see as a big hindrance to the entire, say, global world we have mm-hmm. in trying mm-hmm. to promote peace and work in conflict resolution. I think that intersection between, you know, the local versus the global, as we commonly kind of tease it out in dualistic ways, whatever it is, I see a need for greater connectivity here, and I hope that this program will help to move that forward.
Oh, and those wonderful closing words. I want to thank you, Kimberly Lowe, peace researcher at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice, for joining us in this IVAL conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.